Welcome everybody to today's community hour. We are really, really warm over here, like everybody is, but we have a fan and my canine partner has got a lovely drinky bowl. And our guest today is somebody called Louise. Hello, Louise.
Hello, Jenny. Thank you for inviting me here today.
So, Louise, let me hear a little bit about you. So whereabouts are you from?
I'm a Hampshire girl. I was born and brought up.
Can we get Louise to come a bit closer to the microphone, please?
Right.
Oh, yes. Let me move your microphone a little bit. Can you hear her now?
Okay, talk, Louise.
My father was a surgeon. My mother was very, very involved in local arts world. She set up all the local National Fine Art and Decorative Society, I think it's now called. The Arts Society.
Wow.
But both my parents were very passionate about the arts and they sort of directed me into the art world. I don't remember having much choice, but I spent 45 years of my working life in the contemporary art world in various areas.
Wow.
And when I sold, the last thing I had was a specialist fine art insurance business, and when I sold that, I retired and now have the time to set up this charity that I now work pretty full time at.
Wow, that's amazing. You've had an amazing, interesting life. That's really cool. I understand that you founded this charity. Can you tell me what prompted you to do this?
Yes, it's something I've been talking about for a very, very long time. I founded it with my co-trustees 2 years ago.
Right.
I did it because for years I've lived with mental health problems in my family. Severe mental illness. And I've watched as the treatments, the funding's been withdrawn, the treatments have reduced, and the care is really no longer adequate. There just isn't the money for it to be adequate. Before care in the community was introduced, there were residences and places for them to live. But
yes,
in the 1980s, care in the community was introduced as an alternative to that, to give the give an element of independence to people who were mentally disabled, which of course is a great thought and it works very well if there are enough people in the community to care for them.
Absolutely. And I mean, my experience of care in the community is it's great if it works for you, and there's adequate resource to back you up when you're in the community, but I think that's always been the struggle with that sort of movement. Is that right?
I think the people for whom it's particularly difficult actually are people who have illnesses that affect their behaviour.
Yes, absolutely.
And illnesses any kind of psychotic illness or delusional behaviour or paranoia. And it's those people who I think find it particularly, who care in the community is particularly doesn't work for.
Yes, absolutely. So what is the need that your charity is addressing? Sorry, I didn't even ask your charity's name. Let me start with that. What's the charity's name and what need are you addressing?
Oh, the charity's called Hammersley Homes. And the reason it's called Hammersley Homes is because my mother's maiden name was Hammersley Smith. And she was always very, very keen on the idea of setting up something to provide long-term supported housing and care for people with enduring mental illness.
Yes.
It was something she was very, very concerned about all her life. And so when we did eventually get it going, I sort of named it after her. Because why not, really?
What a lovely legacy she's provided in you.
But and I like the name Hammersley Homes. I think it kind
it
of rolls
really
off
rings
the tongue
nicely, doesn't it? Absolutely, absolutely. So what is the need that you are actually addressing in the, I mean, I know about the housing for people who have serious mental illness, but what is the need that is not currently being addressed, if you like?
Well, I think the thing is that there are plenty of temporary residential options for people who have mental health problems, but
yes,
the aim is always recovery, to get them back into the community, back into independent living. But some of them just find it really difficult to live independently
yes,
in the community.
Absolutely.
And when we're talking about these enduring mental illnesses that symptoms of which are various forms of psychosis and paranoia and delusional behaviour, we know that there are medications available that can control the symptoms. It's sort of rather like Parkinson's disease. You can't cure it, but you can control the symptoms.
Absolutely.
The disease you have forever.
Yes.
But the difficulty with enduring mental illnesses is that when the sufferer is taking the medication and feels well, they think they don't need their medication.
Absolutely, I can understand that, yes.
So they stop taking the medication, and terribly quickly the psychosis takes hold.
Yeah.
And while they're living on their own, or while they're not being regularly enough visited,
yes,
it's not noticed.
No.
And so I think the need that we're addressing most importantly is to make sure that that these people's lives are enriched. They can live. They're lonely. They live in chaos. We want to remove all that.
Yes.
We want to give them a sense of friendship, a sense of community, a sense of purpose, and make sure that their medication's monitored so that if they don't take it, somebody notices.
Yes.
And something can be done about it.
Yes. Does this, at the moment, is there pressure on other services, do you think, to help look after people with mental health, serious mental health problems? Do they end up, I don't know, stuck in A&E and places that are inappropriate?
All the time, and it's not only A&E, it's in police stations.
Right.
And
that must be enormously distressing, actually, for anybody.
I think it's very distressing, but I think it's also quite difficult for the police and for people who are not really trained to look after people with mental illness. I think I was told about a year ago that in Hampshire there are I was told this by the mental health coordinator for Hampshire Constabulary. There are 2,000 incidents a day in Hampshire, and 4% of those are directly attributable to mental health problems, which is 80 every single day.
Wow, that's
and there aren't the services available to be able to accommodate help for 80 people who get involved in the police with the police every single day because of mental health.
Yes. It seems like an enormous problem, actually.
It's a huge problem.
Not that the person with the illness is the problem, but the lack of service is the problem, isn't it, really?
Well, also the pressure on the public services that actually shouldn't be dealing with them. I mean, our prisons are bursting at the seams with people with mental health problems.
Absolutely.
And if you look on the National Audit website to get some figures and statistics, which, of course, we need for all these funding applications that we're making, all it says is the government doesn't know how many people in prison suffer from mental health problems, and there are sometimes in prisons care available for people who have mental illness, but there's no follow up when they leave.
Yes,
we want to keep them safe and stop them going there in the first place.
Absolutely. So. Okay, so we've had a little chat about why you set it up. Let me talk to you about Hammersley Homes themselves, what they offer, and what your homes look like. Before we came on air, we had a little chat about how I was just blown away, really, Louise, by how passionate you were about setting up these homes, and how you've gone right striking ahead, and have gone, and you're now 2 years into being a charity. So you've done a massive amount in like a short space of time.
Well, I've got some very dedicated and determined people to work with. I mean, we're a determined lot. We're the trustees, and we've got some great volunteers. We're very determined. We can see the problems. We see people suffering. We see people hurting. We see families who, if you have a member of your family who has a mental illness, it's like alcoholism. It completely it dominates everything in the family.
Absolutely.
And our main thing is safety and security.
Yes.
And friendship.
Yes. Gosh, you're offering an awful lot there. That's amazing. So, when you've got your house that I know you're fundraising for, so that's exciting.
Yeah.
What kind of activities would you look to provide in your house for people who have got mental illness who come and stay with you?
Well, I think it's important to note that this is their home. This is where they live, so they would have their own bedroom.
So it's not like a care home in a way?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not like a care home. And it's not an institution. It would be, I mean, they'd all be different because they'll all be, they'll be catering to slightly different types of people.
Yes.
But everybody will have their own space, their own room. The first one, the sort of model that we've got in our minds, but it's absolutely not set in stone. It's just a normal terraced townhouse with five bedrooms, maybe three residents, always a bedroom for a member of staff to stay there overnight.
Yes.
And a spare bedroom for maybe a second member of staff if necessary, or visitors or their friends to come and stay, or their family. You know, it's a home and they come and go as they want. So, but there will certainly be activities for them to get involved with if they want to.
Absolutely.
So gardening projects. And
there's no, you will be doing cookery at 10, gardening at 3.
Exactly.
No,
none of that. None of that. But, I mean, there might be art classes, and I anticipate that we open up during the day for non-residents to join in to give families a bit of respite. And also it just expands the community, more people.
That would be brilliant, wouldn't it?
Well, it would be. It'll be amazing when it's up and running. It's an exciting project, I am very excited about it. And yes, I do feel very passionate about it.
That's definitely coming over, Louise, loud and clear. Well done. What kind of impact do you think this will have on the problem of enduring mental health illness? And maybe like the wider perception around mental health illness.
What sort of impact will it have? Well, the problems are extensive, as we know. Mm. There is a lot of focus in recent years on mental health.
Yes.
But the focus has mainly been on mental well-being.
Yes.
And when the two royal princes came out and sort of came opened up about the problems they'd had since their mother died.
Yes.
All the mental health charities kind of jumped in and said, will you be our patron? Well, of course they did. They all wanted it.
Of course.
They ended up creating something called Heads Together, which is an umbrella which encompasses all the big mental health charities, Sane and Rethink and Mind, and all these big ones. But the focus is very much tends to be, I'm generalising, but tends to be on mental well-being.
Things like mindfulness, eating right,
anxiety, dealing with trauma, therapy, talking things through, being open about when you've got problems at home, you're not alone, everybody goes through
That's it.
Yeah. What there isn't, what gets left off this issue, this whole conversation, is the matter of mental illness. It's the matter of mental illness which people have for life. Any illness that you have for life, motor neurons disease or multiple sclerosis, or and you can take medication that control the symptoms, but they don't cure the illness.
No.
And actually, it's a whole different conversation.
Yes.
And that's the conversation that we're trying to address, and that's
yes, the well-being stuff is lovely, but ultimately they're still going to suffer from this condition.
Yes.
And it's going to, I don't know if suffer's the right word, it's kind of colour their lives, certainly.
Yes.
Okay, that's really helpful, actually. That does help.
I think the other thing that's worth mentioning is that recreational drug can have a very significant effect on the development of mental illness.
Yes.
And as recreational drugs consumption increases, so do mental health problems.
I always wonder if it's a catch-22 with that. I wonder sometimes if, you have a mental health problem, so therefore you take drugs.
I think it's that way around too.
Because you then are trying to self-medicate against the mental health problem, maybe not realising what it is necessarily. But, you know, and if you're short on support, which, frankly, from what I've heard today, many people are, then, you know, I can see how that can easily spiral into drug use. But I guess one feeds the other. Would I be right?
Well, yes. Or can you? Actually, there seems not to be any... It seems to be very random. I mean, mental illness can affect absolutely anybody. Rich, poor, you know, big, small. And there are no demographics that can... Absolutely anybody can be struck by it.
Yes.
And some people are born with it, yes. And some people develop it later in life. And you're absolutely right when you say that it can be this chicken and egg situation, because a lot of people, particularly alcohol too,
yes.
can have a serious effect on mental well-being and mental health. But many of the treatment places for alcohol or drugs don't take people with mental health problems.
Oh, well, that's not helpful, is it?
And many of the mental
health
trusts...
Well, maybe it is in a way, because, you know, they don't want to tackle what they don't understand, but it's not helpful to the individual if there's nowhere to go.
Well, the other bit gets worse, because the mental health places won't take people who are on drugs or drink.
No.
So there are these huge numbers of people who fall between the cracks and don't get treatment because they can't get it in on either side.
Mm.
And I think many, many, many homeless people have that problem,
yes.
actually.
Yes.
They sort of fall into
between the cracks, as it were.
Into a situation.
Mm. Wow, okay. So I just think this project has such potential because, you know, you are enriching people's lives. And you mentioned about security and friendship being sort of the core of what you're going to be looking to provide. And obviously, you know, there's the services that we mentioned. So you won't be having, the police won't be dealing with people so much that are, you know, and having to put them in 136 suites. 136 suites are where people get put if they have if they require a mental health assessment. But that's only if they've got space. And also, they're not always the nicest places in the world. So, I mean,
horrible.
You just don't want to put anybody in there, let alone somebody who has a mental illness. So I can absolutely 100% see why it's so important.
But it's a bit of a no-brainer, I think, actually, because if we can keep them safe and secure,
yes.
and enrich their lives and give them a sense of purpose,
yes.
and make sure that they take their medication,
yes.
The hospitals, the mental wards, tell me that 80% of their patients are revolving door patients who come back because they stopped taking their medication.
Oh, yeah. So
and 20% are there long-term because they've got nowhere else to go.
Mm.
I mean, how can that make sense?
Mm.
You know, how can it make sense for the hospitals to be under such pressure that people stop taking the medication, keep going back and back and back.
Yes.
They don't need to stop taking the medication.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. So during the current crisis, have you seen a rise in the need for mental health support?
Yes, certainly. I mean, there's been a massive increase in mental well-being issues,
yes.
you know, depression, anxiety, worry, you know, I'm losing my job, am I going to be able to pay for the things the children need? Am I going to not be able to pay for my mortgage? I mean, it's absolutely hideous. It's really, really bad. Mm. But from the point of view of people who have an enduring mental illness how it's affected them,
yes,
it's affected them because very largely they've been unable to understand what social distancing is all about, and they haven't understood. I mean, a lot of the trouble they get into is because they don't understand.
No.
They don't understand what the rules are.
No.
They don't understand that it's difficult. I often say, actually, that one of the things that differentiates people is the inability to make the link between an action and a consequence. It's sort of broken.
Yeah.
It's just not there. So they can't think, if I do this now, that will happen tomorrow.
Yes.
Or whatever. It's a broken link.
No.
And it's a symptom of the illness. And so all the rules and regulations or guidances that have gone with this COVID thing, they haven't understood.
No, absolutely. I don't think they're the only ones actually in that. I think a lot of people who are more vulnerable have found it incredibly difficult to understand. I'm thinking of people with learning disabilities, who found the whole thing very confusing,
yes.
I think, and need, you know, absolutely ongoing support. And things will change again, and they'll need support to understand it again.
Yes.
Absolutely understand that. So at the moment, I know you're planning to have a house, which is so exciting, but what geographical areas do you cover?
Well, the first one is going to be local, just because that's where we are. That's
yes.
where I am.
So sort of Southampton area?
New Forest-ish.
Out towards the New Forest.
I mean, I live in Lymington, so that's where I have the contacts. And,
yes.
But it's, you know, nothing is set in stone. We're fundraising at the moment. We aim to be able to open our first home in spring 2022. But the eventual aim is to have these Hammersley homes available all over the country.
Oh, wouldn't that be wonderful?
I want to emphasise that these are homes. They're not in any way nobody's forced to live there.
Right. Okay.
It's
just somewhere to live.
It's
where they
somewhere
care
to live. And actually,
yeah.
I mean, the thing is that at the moment they tend to fall into three categories: they're homeless, or
yes.
they live alone, or they live with their families.
Okay.
And their families one day won't be there for them.
No.
And their families worry about who's going to take care of them when they're not around anymore.
You completely understand that. Yes.
And this is what we're doing. We're providing the answer. You know, for a place for the 20% in hospital who've got nowhere to go.
Yes.
A place for people with mental health problems who are homeless, actually, to have some friends.
Yes. So when, let's say you've got your house, how's it going to be funded? What are you going to do for funding?
Well, the residents will pay to live there.
Yes.
But they'll pay, it won't be cost them any more than their current living costs.
Okay.
Many of them will be on benefits and they'll just be transferred.
Okay, so, okay, that's
well,
fine.
We're a charity,
yes.
so we're fundraising all the time.
Yes.
And of course we need some income
to run the
place.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But we absolutely won't be making it more expensive for any of the residents.
So the residents individually will pay what you would normally do in housing costs.
Yes, yeah, so food and board and, you know, whatever.
Yeah. And we're hoping for sort of some fundraising. Well, you've already started on that, been very successful, and you need some more funds to come through. And hopefully, I guess you're going to look for some subsidies and grants. I imagine you're already well on that.
Well, I think it's going to be very difficult to get public funding until we've been up and running for a bit, until we can actually show, you know, these people who were costing the state X amount. I mean, it costs £2,800 a week to be in hospital.
Wow.
If they lived in a Hammersley home and were well looked after, it wouldn't cost £2,800 a week.
Mm. That's astonishing, isn't it?
It would have to relieve pressure on the public purse and the public services.
Mm. And if you had, so let's say I had a relative living at home and I would like them to be part of the Hammersley Homes project and look at living with you, how would I get that referral through?
Well, I think to begin with, all the referrals will come from the Mental Health Trust or the social services.
Right.
So it would go that way around. I don't think, because instantly, the very first home, the day it opens, we've got, I mean, the you know, a year in advance,
yeah.
I'm getting emails from people saying, do you have a home yet where so-and-so can live? There just seems to me not to be anything like it.
No, I completely accept that, absolutely. So we've talked a little bit about how the spread of mental health illnesses have affected people from all races, all beliefs or creeds or demographics, you know, whether they're rich or poor or somewhere in between.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to matter. But I, from what I see on the news and things as a lay person, is that it seems to me that mental illness is on the rise. Would I be right?
I think it's linked this is completely unfounded, because I have to tell you that it's incredibly difficult to get the figures.
Yes.
I've been working for the last 5 years to put out and get some statistics together because I knew that it was something we were going to have to do.
Yes.
It's unbelievably difficult.
Yeah.
I'm told it's on the rise.
Yes, I get that from the news, but it is difficult to get the numbers, isn't it, out of things, especially when you've got things like prisons saying, oh, we don't know how many people have got
exactly.
it.
Exactly, oh. And they certainly don't measure homeless people.
No.
And there are certain categories who the Mental Health Trust don't accept. For example, they don't take anybody with autism because they don't categorise that as a mental illness.
No.
And yet it can lead to irrational and delusional and paranoid behaviour.
Mm. So would you take somebody with autism, in theory?
Yeah, absolutely. We'd take anybody who was referred to us by the system, I think.
I'm waving my thumbs at Louise here, because I think that's a brilliant thing, because, again, I've known several people who've got older adults living at home with autistic spectrum needs that are quite marked, and there's very little service available, apart from learning disability services, which don't quite cover it either. Yes. So, I completely get that. So it is something that is affecting people of all walks of life. So how can people donate or fundraise for your Hammersley Homes?
Well, yes, please. That's something I'd love to say. There are lots of ways of fundraising. When we've got lots of ideas and suggestions on our webpage. But you can join a campaign, set up your own campaign, give a straight donation, and there are lots of very simple ways to help, like shopping on Amazon through Amazon Smile, which I'm sure you know
yes.
about.
And you can select Hammersley Homes as your
yes,
beneficial.
Yes, well, you can select any charity,
fantastic.
Can't you? But it is it's a jolly nice way to be able to just have money trickling in. But I think most importantly is spread the word. Just spread the word and spread the word. And there are so many people who live with this problem, either in their own lives or in lives of their loved ones.
Yes.
We just want to hear from you. We want to build a library of stories, because the more stories we have, the more stronger our case.
Thank you so much for talking to us today. I'd just like to tell everybody who's listening the name of the website to go to if you'd like to find out some further details. That is, grab a pen and paper. That is www.hammersleyhomes, and that's spelled hammersleyhomes.org. Thanks ever so much for listening to our very, very interesting community hour space today.